And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another special edition episode of the Assembly Call. As I've got a special treat for you today, it is part two of my conversation with Devontae Green, which had not taken place back when I posted the last one. We were able to talk for more than an hour, but he had to go, and I told him, you know, there's so much more that I want to talk to you about. And so he was cool enough to schedule another time. So we talked Friday morning and we're able to get into a lot more subjects. And so I'm really excited to post this. And first, I just want to say thank you to everybody who reached out with positive comments about that interview, either through email or on Twitter. I really appreciate it. I mean, it's great, you know, number one, to obviously get those comments for the conversation that Devontae and I had, but also just to know how many people listened and cared and kind of went through that whole thing and really digested it, you know, and took specific things out of it. That's always so rewarding, you know, when you put time and effort and care into, you know, a piece of content like that. And, you know, not just to say like, hey, it's cool that you guys did the interview, but actually like, you know, pulling out pieces that are like an hour into it to show that you really listened to it. So it just, I mean, that's the fuel that, you know, that keeps someone like me going. So I really appreciate you taking the time to send those positive comments. And I know that Devontae appreciated them as well. So you may be thinking, wait a minute, you guys talked for like 80 minutes in the first one. What could you have to talk more about? Well, there were a ton of subjects to talk more about. And I wanted to get his perspective on, you know, whether it would be good for players, you know, while they're playing to have interviews like the one that he did. And I think his answer there is actually pretty illuminating and might surprise you. But wanted to get his thoughts on that. What he thinks about the new name, image, likeness stuff that is going to be coming down the pike soon in college basketball. We talk a little bit more about his diagnosis of type 1 diabetes, how he's handling that. And then I thought he gave such a great answer, such a revealing answer about mental health challenges that college athletes face and mental health challenges that he faced and how Indiana University was there to help him through those. That was great. And you know, we talk about his childhood, what it was like growing up, how he got into basketball. And then I think you'll really enjoy, we kind of go through and get some teammate superlatives, right? You know, he told us that Juwan Morgan has the best hands of anybody he played with. So who's the best player? Who's the best shooter? Who's the best leader? Who's the best dunker? You're going to be shocked by who he says for best shooter, by the way. I just want you to know that. So you're going to be surprised. Even as you think through now, wait, who would shock me? You're still not going to come up with the guy that he said. So as you listen to this, if you have a name in your head right now of who you think it's going to be, and then he tells you the answer, if you're right, tell me, because you need some sort of prize. But I'm pretty sure that you're not going to be right. And then we talk about the traditions of IU, which was a great way to end the conversation. And I really appreciate his candor on this. It's probably something that a lot of us need to hear. But some really interesting stuff about recruiting and how that goes, about the Purdue rivalry and you know how Archie kind of handled that. Just a really fun conversation. Really enjoyed talking to him. I think if you enjoyed part one, you will definitely enjoy part two. So I'm happy to present it to you, and I hope you enjoy it. The last thing that I want to say, and then we'll actually do this whole podcast ad-free, I just want to remind you to go to Playbook Products. So assemblycall.com/PP is the URL. You know, it's too close to Mother's Day. You're not going to be able to go there and order anything for Mother's Day, but you got plenty of time for Father's Day. And so if there's a sports fan in your life, you can find them something at Playbook Products, I promise, because they've got a bunch of college teams, both football and basketball. They've got every professional team. And, you know, who can't use coasters, especially in this age when a lot of us are working at home, but certainly we all have like computer setups. We need a coaster by our computer. We need a coaster by the TV. Maybe you need a coaster on your nightstand. Well, that's three. Well, they sell coasters in sets of four. These really cool stone coasters. They have leather coasters. And each one has a diagram of a famous play. I'm sitting here holding. You can hear me knocking these together. I've got two stone coasters right here from Indiana. One of the Kirk Hastings shot when Indiana beat number one ranked Michigan State when I was in college. And then the 1976 NCAA championship game, the last play when Indiana became champions, undefeated champions by beating Michigan. Also in the Indiana set is the Watt shot, Keith Smart shot. And so for each team, they've got cool diagrams of famous plays in that team's history. Really cool. Stone coasters, leather coasters. You can also put them on mugs. Go to assemblycall.com/PP. You can go there. We have literally had, I don't know the number, but it's like 60 or 70 people, because I can see, because that link is an affiliate link, so we get paid a commission if you order through it. So it's a cool way to support the Assembly Call, cool way to get a cool a gift for somebody. And I can see all the orders that come through. We've had like 60, 70 people that have ordered these gifts. So hop on the bandwagon, get a cool gift. It's assemblycall.com/PP. I think you're really going to like it. It's high quality stuff. I vouch for it. Go to assemblycall.com/PP. Get your Father's Day gift now. All right. Without further ado, here is part two of my conversation with Devontae Green. Very happy to be back with Devontae Green here for part two of our interview. Devontae, thanks for taking even more time to talk with me, man. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
For sure, man. We got lots and lots of great comments after the first interview. I'm sure you saw a lot of the tweets that came through. You know, I got a lot of emails, a lot of comments in our private community about it as well. And there was one of them that was really, really interesting to me that I wanted to get your thoughts on. And this one actually came in this morning. It's from Scotchy. He said about the first part of our conversation, he said, "This interview got me to thinking IU basketball should make players more available early on to an interview such as this, kind of like the coaches have been made available. I believe if tweeters felt like they could associate with a player, they'd be less apt to rip on them socially." What do you think of that?
Possibly. As a player, though, you're trained to always give the politically correct answer, and takes a lot of the personality out of, you know, an interview. But I mean, I see players do interviews all the time after games, you know, even preseason, and people still have their opinions on Twitter. So I don't know how much of a difference it would make.
Yeah. Did you feel stifled, like, by the media policy that they kind of had you guys under while you were at IU?
No, I wouldn't say that.
No.
They taught us how to handle the media and what to expect, but it wasn't real like, you know, strict or anything.
Like, would you have wanted to do an interview like this when you were in college, I guess, is the question. Like, do you think that would have been useful? Do you think that would have been fun? Or is it kind of, you're so focused on basketball and you're not really thinking about that kind of thing?
Me personally, I probably wouldn't have wanted to do an interview during my career. Just because a lot of interview questions are, you know, like, set up for you to say something that might not be necessarily politically correct.
Mm. Yeah, I guess because you had a couple moments like that in press conferences after games where there were a couple, like, I think there was one someone asked you about, like, being like why your play was inconsistent or something like that. Like, did you so you felt like that when you were in some of those press conferences, that people were kind of trying to get you to give answers that might be a good soundbite for them, but might not necessarily reflect well on you?
Yeah, sometimes, for yeah. Sure. Hmm. That was going up. Yeah, I mean, it's just hard when you have, as a player, you have to walk on eggshells about everything you say, you know what I mean? So.
Do you think, I mean, see, that's interesting to me, because I've always kind of been of the mind that, you know, if the players were given, or if the media was given more access to players, maybe not in a press conference setting, because that's so formal. But in a setting like this, where it's a little bit more relaxed, you know, we can actually spend more time talking to get to know each other. It's not just like, you know, me kind of shouting out a question from, you know, sitting in, you know, you're up on a podium and I'm down here. Like, it's just a different vibe. Like, do you think if you could do settings like this, that it would, because you're right, you probably would end up saying maybe something that's not politically correct. And certainly there are things that are inside the locker room that you wouldn't want to talk about, and stories from inside the locker room. But do you think it would be, that there would be any usefulness from your perspective as a player to letting the fans get to know you a little bit better? And maybe it's not interviews like this. Maybe it's just being able to put more stuff on social media, you know, kind of like what it looks like the players are going to start doing now. Like, and I guess the question is there anything that you wish you could have done to get more of yourself out there than you were able to while you were in college?
I wouldn't say there's more I could have done. I mean, something like that, a setting like this would be a lot better, of course, for an interview as a player. But, no, I mean, if fans get to know the players more, they would see them more as a basketball player. And I think that would, help the fans, you know, give more of a positive feedback than a negative.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So, you know, one other question I wanted to get your perspective on, just about, you know, how things are already changing just since you left, which has only been a year. Obviously, it hasn't been that long. But what is your reaction to some of the name, image, likeness stuff and kind of this movement? Obviously, Indiana's been at the forefront of it, and it looks like, you know, the rules will eventually be changed to allow that. What are your thoughts on that? Is that a good thing? Is there something about it maybe that we're not thinking about that could be a bad thing? What do you think about it?
I think it's a good thing. I think it should have happened a long time ago. But I like that they're working towards, you know, letting that happen, because that would be big for the players for sure.
Let's say, okay, hypothetically speaking, like, you know, take your senior year, right? You got a guy like Trace Jackson Davis comes in. Just, you know, I don't want to. Maybe putting names to it isn't the best idea, but say there's a player like that, like an in-state player, everybody kind of loves that player, and he's getting like these endorsements and all these different things, and no one else in the locker room is really getting them. Would that cause an issue, do you think? Or would guys just be happy for him getting what he's getting? Like, is there anything there that could cause rifts, you think?
I think it'll vary by team for sure. But I think at first everyone will just be happy that the rule has changed, because everybody will get their fair share of, you know, endorsements or whatever it may be. There will always be someone who's getting a little bit more than everyone. But I think for the most part, everybody will just be happy that the rule changed and they can actually make money off it. Somewhere down the line, though, there might be some problems in the locker room, you know, once it's kind of normal. And I think that's a problem. That's probably the biggest problem of letting it happen now.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, it probably just depends on the locker room. If you've got a real tight locker room where everybody's, you know, cool with each other, then it probably doesn't matter. If it's fractured and there's jealousy, then guys probably aren't going to be happy. All right, so say that the name, image, likeness thing had been in place when you were there. Who would have been like the ideal companies that you would have wanted to have like sponsor you, or that you would have been, you know, that you would have wanted to promote if you could have?
I don't know. That's a good question. Bloomington companies?
Probably Bloomington, because I imagine most of it would be local. But, you know, it kind of depends. I mean, that's the thing. You know, if you're an out-of-state guy, you know, and especially if your games are broadcast out of state, like IU games are broadcast on the Big Ten Network, which is in New York, you know, maybe there's something that you could get, you know, back home too. So I guess either home or local, kind of in Bloomington.
Well, probably my favorite food places. And Baked of Bloomington. It's my favorite.
Yeah.
I said that. But I don't know, maybe like a technology place. Cause I like games and stuff like that. So I would think that would probably fit me, you know?
Yeah. What are your favorite kind of games to play?
Right now, Call of Duty is number one on my list. And then, I play 2K from time to time, but I haven't really been playing games like that recently, but those are my top two.
You know, we often hear, you know, players talk about, you know, playing video games. I know I've listened to some interviews with some of the new recruits, guys who haven't even had a chance to meet each other yet on the basketball court, but they've been playing, you know, video games together. And a lot, you know, like when older fans hear guys talking about playing video games, a lot of times they kind of roll their eyes and it's like, man, why are these guys playing video games? You know, they should be doing other stuff. Is that actually like a decent way to kind of like have some kind of team bonding? Like, is there something valuable that you get out of that besides just the fun of playing games? Is there something that the older fans don't realize about that?
Definitely. Cause, you have to communicate, you know, with your team, in the game. So naturally it's just a kind of a bonding thing as a team. I know me, JMO Race, Freddie McSwain, we used to play Fortnite together and we all got really close because of that. So really? I think it's a great, excellent bonding tool.
Now, when you guys are playing, are you all remote or are you in the same room playing?
Nope, remote.
Remote. That probably shows how old I am, because back in the day when we would play video games, you know, we'd all be like going over to someone's house and playing, but obviously you don't have to do that now. Okay, so is there more trash talk among the basketball team about basketball or about video games?
Probably video games. For sure.
Were there ever any like rifts that happened because of a video game, or like guys are mad at each other for like a couple days because of something that happened in a video game, or was it never quite that serious?
No, it's gotten there a couple times.
All right, how much of that story do you want to reveal without naming names? Like, I'm curious what could cause what would cause that? Is it like you're supposed to be on the same team and someone shoots the other one, or is it because the trash talk goes too far? Like, what causes that?
Usually a lot of trash talk. You know how to get into your teammate's head with certain things, so you stay for that.
Now, were you a big trash talker on the court?
Depends the day.
Were you more likely to be in a trash talking mood when you were having one of those games where you're kind of out of your mind making 6-7 threes? Or was it something that you would do on a game when you were struggling to try to get into the game?
Probably a game where I was hot.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you'll take a shot or like somebody from the bench, like, oh, that's off. You know, they'll yell, that's off from the bench. And you kind of turn and look at them afterwards, like, yeah.
Were there any players that you played, probably Big Ten players, because, you know, you see those guys more and probably like build on court relationships with those guys more. Were there any Big Ten players that really brought it out in you, either because you just kind of had these mano a mano battles, or because they annoyed you, or because you just happened to play a certain way against them? Like, was there anybody that really brought the trash talk out in you?
I wouldn't say not really. There was one guy on Nebraska, Mac. I forget his first name. His last name is Mac. He was good though, but he used to talk every time we played them.
The point guard, Cam Mack, I think?
Yeah, point guard. Yeah. And he used to talk trash every single time we played them. So, I mean, he was the one I was looking forward to the most and seeing, you know, and talking trash to. But there wasn't anybody else I was really, like, known for it.
Yeah. Who were the other big trash talkers on the team? Like, were there any other guys on your team on Indiana that were big trash talkers, either in games or in practice?
Yeah. Every day practice was, you know what I mean, a battle. Duran was probably the biggest trash talker. Maybe because of me, though. He was always trying to talk to me. Maybe that's just for me. But no, he used to talk to other people, too. Who else? Some guys would have their days. Justin Smith, he'd have his days, you know. Sometimes Al. Rarely, but sometimes. we'd have some good battles, though, in practice. Practice was fun.
What do you think about the way that trash talk is policed during games? Because I hate it personally. Like, I was always a big talker back when I played, and I'll see some of the technical fouls that guys get for, like, you know, saying get that stuff out of here after a block or whatever, and some of the other stuff. It's like my personal feeling is there should be a 5-second grace period after a big play. Where as long as you don't like hurt somebody or touch somebody, anything should go. You can say what, if it's a big play, if it's a dunk, if it's a big three, say whatever you want, you know, whatever. Is that, how annoying is that to play and your instinct is like to get into it? You know, most of the fans like it because it's an entertainment product, and yet, you know, you have to kind of try to keep it vanilla, because that would annoy the heck out of me if I was playing.
It's pretty annoying. Because if you're a competitor, it's just natural, you know, to have a reaction to something, a big play, like you said. But I mean, as long as, I think it should be fine, like you said, as long as like nothing like crazy is said, you know, then I don't see the problem with trash talking.
No. So speaking of trash talk, you told a story at the end of our first episode, the one about Archie and him owing you $1 million. And I'm curious if between when that episode came out and now, if Archie has reached out to you and paid you $1 million. No, didn't think so. It's interesting. You know, I had someone text me after listening to that basically said, you know, that story really summed up kind of the core of Archie's tenure. And the phrase they used was bitch at them about everything, but didn't connect. And you know, we talked about that a lot, you know, in the first episode, you know, kind of your relationship with Archie and how it evolved and all that stuff. And we don't need to go into that again. But what I am curious about is the flip side of that, you know, because it's easy when a coach gets fired, you know, and you haven't won as much as you wanted to. You talk about all the bad things, you know, and obviously people saw you and Archie on the court, you know, sometimes, and it looked like the relationship wasn't great, which you spoke to. But what are his strengths as a coach? You know, and why, when Tom Crean left and Archie came in, you know, did you decide to stay and play for him? I'm curious about the flip side of that and what positives you took from the time with Archie.
Yeah. He's a guards coach. That was one of the main reasons I stayed. And he's played before himself. So he knows what it's like to be a player. And that has a big role as a coach. That's a big thing, because not all coaches understand what it's like to be on the other side.
Yeah, which to me has always made it strange why he didn't connect better, you know, because he does kind of have that background. Where does that come in? I remember that was talked about with him when he first came in. It's like, oh, you know, because Tom Crean didn't have a playing background, and so for all of his success, that was always seen as one of his weaknesses. Like, where specifically is that player background really able to come through? Is that something that, like, you know, in a game he's able to see things that you see and point things out? Is it something from a development side? Because it didn't seem like it necessarily helped the personal relationship that much. Correct me if I'm wrong, but like, where do you really see the benefits of having a guy who's played the position before as your head coach?
I think in two areas. One is the scheduling. Before he came, our schedule was probably twice as crazy, as far as like timing of workouts and practices and all that. So he understands what it's like to be, you know, a player. So he would, you know, use that when making the schedule for the week. And actually, we didn't even have a schedule with Coach Crean. He wanted us to just be on the fly. Like, he texted us when practice was 2 hours before practice sometimes, and we'd have to be there. So, and it was stressful that way. So I think the one is with the scheduling, and two is development. He just teaching moments he could make, because he was a point guard for someone like me who was trying to become a point guard. And for me, that was big.
So not, you know, because you talked about the difference in player development between Crean and Archie, you know, to where Crean was really big on like individual work and developing individual skills, whereas Archie really wanted to play 5-on-5. So you're talking more here about like development of your mentality, development of your understanding of the game, not necessarily like how to make a bounce pass or how to shoot, but how to see the game.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. By the way, the stuff about Crean not scheduling practice, which you've heard from so many players that played for him, has got to be one of the most insane details I think I've ever... I remember when I first heard that, I thought it wasn't true. I was like, how could you not... How do you... Like, what did you do? How do you plan a day when you don't know when practice is going to be?
Yeah, you don't. you couldn't sleep. It was very stressful. You know, you never knew when you was going to get that text. And, especially as a freshman, it was hard. It was really hard.
What did the older guys say about that? Because I'm sure you must have. Oh, well, I guess, did you know that was how it was when you committed to come here, or was that something you like? You show up and you're like, wait, what? We just have to wait for this guy to text us.
Yeah, I walked into a blind. I had no idea that's how it was. The older guys were used to it, so they were basically like, "Well, yeah, get used to it."
Jeez, that's crazy. That is crazy. Yeah. You know, one other thing that I wanted to hit on that we mentioned in the first show was, you know, your diagnosis as being type 1 diabetic. And I saw that you put a tweet out about that. Was that the first time that you've kind of publicly acknowledged it since the diagnosis?
It was. It was the first time. I got diagnosed maybe 2 months ago. And I've just been, like, you know, seeing doctors and learning how to control it and whatnot. But nobody really knew. And then a couple people found out when they heard the interview the first time. So I just felt like it was time to just put it out there.
Yeah. You know, I did some research on it. You know, pro athletes who have had successful careers with type 1 diabetes, you know, Jay Cutler, Kendall Simmons, those are NFL players. Chris Dudley and Adam Morrison were NBA players. Lauren Cox is a recent, you know, college basketball All-American. She was the third overall pick in the WNBA. Is there anybody else that you've kind of seen or met or looked to since that diagnosis to give you inspiration for like, hey, like this is like, I can still, all my goals are still out there once I figure out how to manage this. Is there anybody that you're kind of looking to as a role model in that way?
Yes. I first thing I did was, look up who, what athletes had diabetes and played with it. And, the basketball players, of course, were, it was cool to see that there was some professional basketball players up there. And, I also seen a soccer player, which is kind of amazing because that's a lot of running, you know?
Yeah. And,
but I wouldn't say someone specific. I mean, I look up to, but now that I know that it's possible, then that's all I needed, you know?
Yeah. You know, one of the things I kind of went down a rabbit hole, you know, researching it and some of the symptoms that you deal with type 1 diabetes, you know, and one of the things that a lot of people talk about is some of the mental health challenges of it, you know, and some of that comes from just like, you know, kind of the daily, I guess, necessity of like tracking your blood sugar and doing the shots and like all of that. It just, it sounds like it kind of starts to weigh on people at a certain point. You know, which kind of got me thinking about how IU handles mental health issues, you know, which is something that's been talked about a lot. You know, Indiana has the Excellence Academy, you know, putting athletes first a lot. And we hear about it a lot in the abstract, but it's never really quite clear how it works. And so I'm just curious if there was ever a time for you, you know, when you were able to kind of use the resources that IU provided to like help you get through something that you were going through on or off the court. And what does that kind of support look like? Because I love that Indiana does it, but I don't really know exactly kind of what that looks like.
Yeah, for sure. Not many people know that about that, about the help that IU gives with mental health. But I did. I was aware of it, and I seen the school psychiatrist and talked to her. And she was, her name is Dr. Day. She was probably the best person I've ever talked to as far as like relief. Like, you know what I mean? Just getting, cause being a student athlete, it's not easy at all. And especially mentally as a young kid, you're going to have a lot of ups and downs, and that can affect kids mentally, you know? And I think it's really good to have someone to talk to at least. That'll just listen and you know, take that stress off of you.
Yeah. Is that, what kind of advice would you give, you know, to like new kids that are coming in that, you know, I imagine when you come in from high school, you've probably dominated, you know, high school and it hasn't been as difficult, and college is just like this completely different challenge. And there's, you know, look, I think there's always been kind of like this macho culture, especially among, you know, male athletes, where it's like, I don't need help. I don't need this. And so I, you know, I appreciate you talking about how you did that. And obviously, you know, guys like Kevin Love and all these NBA guys that have come forward with that, I think has helped. But what kind of advice would you give, you know, to someone who's coming into IU fresh, they think everything is great and haven't really hit the struggles yet. How would you kind of prepare them for what's ahead?
My advice would be if you start going through it mentally, and you will start going through it mentally, use those resources. Cause I mean, it sounds like you said, as a male, a young male athlete, usually are like, I don't need any help, you know, and have that kind of macho-ness. But it really helps. And it will make you feel better. At one point, I thought I was going insane, you know, but after talking to Dr. Day a couple of times, I really was in a whole completely different headspace, you know. And no matter what the problem is, she will help you, or whoever it is will help you. And you should definitely use it.
It's amazing that those resources are there. It's so great. And you know, I think, you know, people hear that, you know, you say, you know, I think I, you know, thought that you were going insane. And most people listening to this obviously view everything about you through the prism of basketball. You know, so they're probably thinking like, oh, practice must have been tough, or, you know, when you were struggling through a game. Like, what percentage of the struggles that you went through, or that an athlete in general goes through, are sport specific, and his other stuff that's off the court that no one ever even knows about. You know, no one ever even thinks of it. Yeah. It affects us on a daily basis. You know, like if my wife is mad at me, you know, it's going to affect like my day, you know, but no one's doing a post game show after I work, you know? So I'm curious, like, is it mostly like basketball sports related stuff, or is it a lot of other stuff that accumulates too?
I'd probably say it's 60-40. 60% basketball related and 40% outside factors.
Yeah. And is it something where like guys on the team are comfortable talking with each other about that? Or do you feel like it's something that everybody kind of goes through on their own and doesn't really want to kind of reveal to each other?
Everybody handles things differently. But when I was at IU and our team, a lot of guys leaned on other guys when people were going through rough times. You know what I mean? And honestly, every time we would, right after practice, we'd get in the locker room, we'd talk about practice for a few, and then after that, it was everything but basketball. You know what I mean? We talk about everything but basketball. So I've had a lot of help from guys, my teammates at IU, and I'm sure I've helped some other guys as well.
That's awesome. It's good to know. So I want to go back. You know, one of the things we didn't get a chance to talk about as much during session one of this interview was just kind of getting to know you and your backstory. I'm curious, like, what was your childhood like? You know, like, are there any stories or anecdotes that kind of sum up what life was like for you growing up?
No, I mean, I grew up a little different. I had two older brothers, but they were both in college for ball.
What's the age difference?
9 years and 10 years.
9 and 10. That's the same difference I am with my brother, who's 9 years younger. Yeah, it's kind of like he's my brother, but then I was always kind of like a half parent, half brother, you know? So it's kind of like, we're still kind of like figuring out exactly what the relationship is going to be as we get older, you know? How was that growing up with that age difference?
It was almost like I was only child for a little bit. And, like you said, you don't really get to see your brothers and hang out with your brothers that much. Or they're more of like a parent figure to you. And I mean, me and my brothers weren't that close at the time, but, thankfully recently we've gotten a lot more closer just because we've had time to like spend with each other, you know?
Yeah, it's, you know, you get older, you've started to have some of the same life experiences, you can relate about more things. That's the same way with me and my brother. We both had daughters, you know, and that was kind of something that now we can relate about, you know? When did you start playing basketball?
I was 4 years old.
4 years old?
Yeah.
Do you remember, like, who put the basketball in your hand for the first time?
My dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was he a basketball player too?
Not in any major level or anything, but he played like in high school and stuff. And then he ended up being a coach after that.
Oh, he did. What level did he coach at?
High school. He started off coaching girls basketball, high school, and then eventually switched over to boys.
What were like his core basketball philosophies that he imparted on you? You know, like, to him, what were the most important things that a basketball player should do or that a basketball player should be?
I think mainly just being an all-around player. He's like, you don't want to be, it's good to be good at one thing, but you want to be well-rounded as a player.
Did you guys, as you like got older, I assume that you guys probably like, you know, played one-on-one and kind of battled it out like in the driveways and stuff. Do you remember the first time you ever beat him?
I don't remember. No, I was probably really young. That's why.
Were you really good from a young age? Like, did you just take to basketball naturally?
I did. Yeah. I think I was just naturally a shooter when I started playing.
So like growing up, like in rec leagues and in, you know, like the youth basketball leagues, were you always like the best player or the go-to guy?
Yeah. Yep. We had a league called NBAC, and I think my team won like every year for like four straight years.
Wow. And then, And, you know, obviously we talked about last time, just, you know, kind of the, you know, what the basketball culture is like in New York City, you know, and everybody knows about just, you know, the, you know, playing in the Park League games. When did you start playing in those games and starting to go up against guys that were older than you to kind of test your skills out?
Since middle school. Yeah. Cause all my friends were older than me, and they were going to the park, you know, trying to play. And I would want to go with them and want to get picked up. But I was so little, so young, nobody wanted to pick me up. So that was just motivation to get better. And then the rest is history.
Was there a moment or like a game, you know, when you finally did get picked up and you went out and played well? Because it's one thing to like do it against your peers. You know, it's like, okay, I can go beat these guys. But was there a moment when you went and did it against someone older or that you looked up to where you were like, whoa, like I might be pretty good.
Yep. I was in ninth grade playing. There was this guy named Kev, short, bald dude, but super fast and crazy handles. And he used to kill me growing up. Like, and he wouldn't take no mercy on me. He'd blow by me and lay and then talk smack afterwards. And then on ninth grade, I finally beat him. I gave him a run for his money, you know, and he gave me my props for that. But at that point, I knew I was okay. Now I can play with these older guys.
Yeah. So did it change your mentality? Like, was it like a light switch kind of flipped on, or was it still a more gradual thing?
I mean, it was pretty gradual, but it felt good.
Yeah. Who were some of the best players that you played against when you were young? Like, was there anybody kind of growing up that was either, you know, kind of from, you know, from your area that came back to play that, you know, was like an NBA player, a guy that we would know, or anybody like that?
I mean, in the AU circuit, I played against a lot of great players who are in the NBA now. I think the toughest guy I've ever had to guard and play against is Malik Monk.
Oh man!
But Aaron Fox gave us he killed us too pretty bad. So those are probably the top two guys.
Yeah. So that's interesting because both those guys obviously played at Kentucky. De'Aaron Fox and Malik Monk, and you never got to play against Kentucky, which is, you know, one of the great Indiana rivalries. So many big moments have happened in the Indiana-Kentucky rivalry. The rivalry that you did get to play in was against Purdue, and of course we know that Indiana hasn't had a lot of success against Purdue over the last few years. But I'm always curious, you know, your perspective as someone who's from out of state. What did the Indiana-Purdue rivalry mean to you, and at what point did you realize that it was bigger than a normal game?
Don't crucify me.
It's a safe space. We won't do that.
It meant absolutely nothing to me coming into college. I knew that was our rival. I didn't know how big or serious it was, really. I mean, I've watched, you know, the rivalry games growing up, but it didn't really like mean anything personally to me. But
well, why would it? I mean, you know,
exactly. But after getting to IU and seeing like how passionate guys were about the rivalry, I think that kind of made it mean a little more something to me then.
Now, when you say how passionate guys were, you mean guys in the locker room, your teammates, how passionate they were about it?
Yeah. Yep. Teammates, even like assistant coaches or, you know, strength coaches. Yeah, they'd get extra hyped. I remember Crean used to hang guys' faces all around the gym, like a Purdue's guys, just to mess with us. And dudes just be ripping the posters off the wall and stuff as we go into practice.
So obviously, you know, you never beat Purdue during your time at Indiana. What do you attribute that to? Was this just Purdue just had better teams? Was it there was some kind of way that, you know, you guys prepared for those games that didn't work out? Like, why do you think that happened?
Well, I think my first year, Purdue was really good. They were just really good, and we were down with injuries. I think if we would have had a full team, good game. But that's what was my year. Sophomore year, the rest of my years, I don't think they were necessarily better than us.
Uh-oh. We seem to be having connection issues. Hopefully we get Devontae back.
And, oh,
Let's see. There we go.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're back now.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. Sorry.
That's okay. Probably just a connection drop. It happens with Zoom.
Yeah, but I mean, I didn't think they were better than us any of the years, really, but they just had better games than us those nights.
Yeah. Who were the other teams that you really did get up to play? Were there other? I mean, obviously, we talked about, you know, Michigan State, how you guys always give them trouble. Can you pinpoint why? Because those teams were always really good Michigan State teams. Like, why were you able to? Because you beat them three times in a row, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. We would get, you would think that was our rivalry game sometimes. We would get super excited for that one. And even Archie would get excited for that one too.
More so than the Purdue games? Like, was it a different excitement than the Purdue games?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yep.
Interesting. Sorry, I interrupted you. You were going to talk about Archie, like how he reacted to the Michigan State games.
Yeah, I think he, I don't know. I think he wanted to be Izzo really bad. That's what I think it was.
I mean, hey, let's try and beat Matt Painter too. let's beat them all, Arch. I mean, it. Yeah. I mean, you guys always. I swear, like a lot of times, it was like a different team, you know. So it does. It kind of makes sense. Okay, so how did that manifest itself? Like when you could tell that Archie really wanted to beat another team, you know, like you just described. How does that come out? Like, how is he different in a week of practice than just say a normal week?
It's a lot more up tempo. He's a lot more, you know, animated in practice, and won't let us forget who we're playing coming up, you know?
You know, that reminds me, this was your junior year, I guess. This was junior year, I think, kind of in the midst of the losing streak. We guys lost 12 out of 13. And you guys played at Minnesota, and they just killed us in the second half. And I remember Archie talked about, I don't know if he talked about it right after that, but like a couple weeks after that, kind of talked about, because you guys started to play better. Like, I think you came home, you still lost a few games, but obviously you won some games down the stretch. And he had talked about how that was like a real turning point and like kind of practice was different. And do you remember coming back from that game and what the reaction was? And if there was like some sort of big team meeting or like really harsh practice afterwards that kind of got everything going?
No. I don't remember. I definitely don't remember.
were there any times like that kind of happened with Archie where there was like a specific game that he took especially hard, and then, you know, there was kind of like a line in the, I think that's what he said, it was like a line in the sand moment. Like, were there any of those moments as you went through where it's just like, hey, we're not playing well, you know, you're either with me or you're not, let's go, and it was kind of like a rallying point for the team? Because we talked about that as fans, but I'm curious if that's actually what happened.
Yeah, there was some moments like that. You know, when you start losing a couple back to back, you know, the locker room gets a little more quieter, the practices get a little less intense, and guys start feeling away. But we've had a couple of those moments where it's like, all right, if we don't turn it around now, then we're not going to be where we want to be, and I couldn't remember specific times, but there were definitely moments like that.
Yeah. You know, we talked a lot in our first discussion about all the great moments, you know, that you had. Not all of them, but, you know, a lot of the great moments that you had as a player at IU. I'm curious for kind of the flip side. What was your lowest moment as a player, either because of something individually or because of, you know, something going on with the team?
Probably during my suspension. That was probably the lowest my whole career, because mentally it was just tough, you know. I was going through it then, and I knew my team needed me. It wasn't a good feeling at all, you know. But fortunately, I was able to bounce back from that, and I think after that, I really just started playing better basketball, honestly.
Yeah, like I talked about. Yeah, you played the best basketball of your career, the most consistent.
Yeah.
Was the suspension just like, did you have an issue with the suspension, or was it legitimate in your eyes?
I'm kind of 50-50 about it. I know I was wrong, but at the same time, didn't God deserve to be suspended? So, I mean, but it is what it is now. I don't want to talk too much about it, but yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. And, you know, like you said, I mean, you were able to turn it into a positive. Because I think, you know, a lot of us saw what you did down the stretch and it was like, hey, this is the guy that, you know, that we've been seeing, that we know is in there. What, like that, I mean, you know, that was such a time of just consistent play. I think, you know, you were getting 4 or 5 assists a game, you know, really just seemed so locked in. And, you know, your senior year, you obviously had those moments, but it wasn't quite as consistent as that. What do you think was different about that stretch that didn't maybe carry over into your senior year that you hadn't seen previously? Like, what was it about that particular stretch that enabled you to play so well game after game after game?
I think I was just locked in. I was super locked in and focused on what I wanted to do and what I wanted our team to do, you know? So I think that was why I had such a good stretch. And my senior year, how do I say this? I was expecting, you know, it to be differently for me. So I let that get in my head too much before I actually, there was a point though, my senior, I was like, all right, let me get back on this road and not worry about the factors I can't control. Cause at the end of the day, if you can't control it, you can only control what you can control, you know?
In what ways did you expect it to be different?
Well, I thought me and Archie got a little bit more on the same page that year. Well, beginning of that year, at least. And we was going to have a little bit different style of play. And I mean, I thought I was going to be a starter. And I mean, I was just coming off an injury but I wasn't playing like super major minutes or anything. So I think that affected me in the beginning.
What is the conversation like where, so you're expecting to be a starter, but then you end up not being a starter. Is that a conversation that you have that Archie kind of sits you down and talks about why? Or is it just something where, like in practice, you're playing with the number twos and on game day, you're not starting and you don't really know why? Like, how does that all come about?
Well, yeah, we play every day in practice, like you said. I mean, like I told you last time.
Yeah.
And we had the, you know, the gold standard jersey and all that. And I didn't go to him until a couple games in the season about asking about why I'm not starting or what the issue is, because in practice I was leading in the gold standard by like a huge margin and I didn't understand. And eventually he basically told me, well, we need scoring off of the bench, we need a spark off of the bench, and basically, I want you to be that guy. So eventually, I just accepted that and was like, okay, well, then this is what I'm going to do. Then this is what I'm going to be. Then I'm just be the best at this.
And your senior year was, okay, so you missed the first 3 games of your senior year. That was, you were dealing with injuries, right, for the first 3 games and then through part of practice?
Yep. Yep.
How much do you think that affected things?
I think it had an effect for sure. Coming into the season hurt. It's probably why I had to slowly, like my minutes weren't good in the beginning. Like I had to get into the rhythm of things, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the injury part is tough. Cause you dealt with injuries at the beginning of that season. And then if I recall correctly, the beginning of 2019, that's where both you and Rob were dealing with off-season injuries, right? In the very beginning of the season. Yeah. Which kind of makes it tough to build, you know, kind of get a rhythm when the guys who are supposed to be your 2 leading ball handlers are both dealing with injuries.
Yeah, yeah.
How much does that happen where guys are dealing with injuries and, you know, I mean, in your case, like you missed some games because of it, and so it's kind of obvious. But like how much of a role do, especially as you go through the season, do just injuries and just kind of the, you know, the physical issues of playing in the Big Ten night after night, like how much of a toll does that take on you physically and mentally?
Huge. I think it's a huge toll. I mean, physically you're playing a game, you're playing probably 2 or 3 games a week, right? And you got practices in between. And they say, you know, after once the season starts, you're never 100% again. Like, no matter what you do, you're never back at 100%. So you're playing the season fatigued pretty much most of the season.
Yeah. And do you, looking back on it, you know, that you know, now that you've got this diagnosis with the type 1, and based on what you've learned about that and how it affects your body, and you mentioned this a little bit last time, but I wanted to get a little more clarity on it. Like, how much do you think that impacted, you know, either your, like, your energy levels, your physical, you know, ability to withstand that? Like, how much do you think that actually impacted you, you know, going back into your college years?
It probably had a huge impact, especially on my injuries. Doctor told me it was the direct cause for my calf. I had calf strains before out, and he said that was definitely the reason why. So who knows how long, you know, I've had it and how long I've been playing with it and dealing with that stuff, but I think it's definitely had an effect on my body.
I was talking to my wife about our interview, and she was always a big fan of yours because she loved guys that played with flair and, you know, could actually shoot. She would get so mad walking into games and seeing us miss free throws that she would just, like, she would walk out sometimes, be like, I can't watch this anymore. But she always liked it when you were shooting free throws because she thought you would make them. So I was telling her about it, and she was like, you know, her reaction was, why didn't they figure it out when he was at IU? You know, like, is that something that you think could, like, in hindsight, could have or should have, like, is there a symptom you could have described differently that you're like, man, if I'd only said that, they might have caught it, or if only this test had been run? Like, do you have any regret about either you or someone else not catching that or realizing, hey, there might be a deeper issue going on here that's causing these calf issues or causing these other issues?
Yeah. I mean, I blame myself mostly because it's my body. You know, I know my body best. But my calves have been tight for a long, long time now. And I think that's a reason for it. Instead of trying to work on fixing them, I guess, then I could have been like, maybe something's wrong. You know, maybe we should get some blood work done, and then we could have caught it then.
Yeah. Well, good you caught it now. And, you know, obviously, you know, be able to fix that, manage it, not fix it, but manage it and still be able to play. So let me switch gears a little bit here. There are four guys that are still on the team that you played with: Rob Phinisee, Jerome Hunter, Race Thompson, Trace Jackson Davis. You know, now Indiana's kind of going into this new era, a new coach. He's talking about, hey, we're going to play more, you know, four out, one in, kind of a more wide open style. You know, this NBA coach, which again, we all would have loved to see you play in. Out of those four guys, who do you think is going to thrive the most in a new system like this?
Can I pick two?
Sure. Yeah.
Jerome and Race, for sure.
Interesting.
I think Jerome just has, you know, he has a good body. He has, like, length. And he's a good shooter. You know, I've played. I don't know what he shot this year. I don't know how good he shot this year, but I know he's a good shooter. And working with a coach like that, he'll only get better, and he'll probably thrive in that system. And Race, also being a guy who he had a good year this year, he can also shoot it too. So if Coach Woodson, you know, get a lot of reps of shooting with him and gives him the green to shoot, then I think he'll thrive too.
So that's interesting because, you know, we've talked a lot about Race and how much it would open things up if he could step out and make shots, you know, playing the four man and give Trace some more space. So you're telling us, because he's shown kind of, you know, the ability and little flash, but you're telling us he can step out and make those shots.
Race can definitely make that shot. Yeah.
Is it just a confidence thing?
Probably. Yeah. A lot of guys, I mean, it's always been an issue with our shooting, in my opinion. A lot of guys are scared to shoot it. You know, they don't want to hear anything about it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it definitely sounds like Mike Woodson is going to be open to let's let it fly. Cause he was certainly like that when he was coaching with the Knicks. So
yeah,
hopefully,
exactly.
Hopefully it'll be a little bit more like that. Okay. So I want to do a few just like best ofs of guys that you played with, and you can answer yourself if you want to, cause you might think that you're the best among these guys. Cause you said last time that Juwan Morgan had the best hands of anybody that you played with, which kind of made me curious. So who's just like the best player, hands down, the best player overall that you played with?
Best player. Probably OG. He's all around, you know, he can shoot it. He can defend really well. He can drive to the basket. So I'd say OG.
Man, I feel like we were robbed his senior year of seeing what he could have done. Because he showed these flashes as a freshman, and then you saw it at the start of the sophomore year, and then it felt like kind of as soon as he got into his groove, he got hurt.
Yeah. I think it hurt our team tremendously, honestly.
Well, okay, so what's your best OG story? Because OG is hilarious, and I don't know if he tries to be hilarious, or, like, here's what I can never tell about OG, because he's like, you know, when he's talking to the media, he gives these real short answers. And, like, having not, like, been around the team, I can never tell if that's just him or if he's kind of, like, trolling the media because it's the media asking him questions. So is that actually him, or is he kind of, does he try, is that a persona that he tries to create for the media?
No, that's definitely OG 100%. I don't think he likes the media that much, so I think that's why his answers are like that, but that's how he is, yeah.
What do you have, like, a favorite story? Like, when I say OG, you know, like, what immediately flashes to mind? Is there, like, a memory on court or off court of him that you think about?
No, not a specific memory. Me and OG are close. We're pretty cool. We've had ups and downs for sure, but that's my guy. So, I mean, I have bunches of stories, but none specifically that I can, you know, say right now.
You're probably not surprised at all, but I mean, what have you thought watching his development in the NBA? Because he just gets better every single season. I assume you're not surprised by that.
I'm not surprised because his ceiling is to the sky, you know. But I've been super proud of how much he's grown as a player, like, in such a short period of time, and where he's at. I'm really, really proud of him.
What is it? Like, I mean, obviously the athletic ability stands out. Like, that's obvious to anybody. That's why he was recruited, even though he was, like, the 250th ranked player. But what else is it about him that kind of makes him special, that has allowed him to just to grow like this?
His work ethic. You know, he is constantly trying to improve different areas of his game, which I think is really important. And I think that's why he's so successful now.
Did he ever guard you in practice?
Yes.
What was that like?
we've had our battles for sure. He's probably one of the best defenders I've had to go against, for sure. He won't tell you. One time in open gym, I dunked on him, but he'll never admit it. So
that you dunked on OG. Whoa.
I did.
Okay, but you're gonna have to describe that. Was this like a fast break? Was it half court and you just, like, drove down the lane? Like, how'd that come about?
It was an open gym. We had a guy on a visit. It was Tremont Waters, actually. He was on a visit guarding me. I was on the left wing. I pump fake and he jumps forward. I go by him and OG comes from the help side, opposite block, and, like, kind of jumps. He jumps by, but I jumped on one foot, got to the rim before him and dunked it. And I was like, did I dunk on him? Everybody was like, yeah, okay, cool. Just wanted to make sure. He's like, he didn't dunk on me. But, yeah, I got you, OG.
You got him. That is awesome. So, okay, so that brings up an interesting point. So you talk about guys coming in on recruiting visits. What is that process like where, you know, because guys come in and, you know, typically they're set up with a host, you know, kind of a player that they're kind of with, and you show them around. Can you describe that process a little bit and what it's like, you know, to kind of be on the host side of that when you got kind of a highly regarded player who's coming in, and specifically, like, what kind of guidance are you given? Because obviously the coaches, they're bringing this recruit in because they want to get him, you know, so yep. What kind of guidance are they giving you for how to make that an experience that's going to help get this guy to commit?
Well, I've never been a host in my entire career, so I can't tell you directly what it's like being a host. But they would want you, obviously. There's different kinds of guys coming in all the time. So I know Arch used to always like make sure he's like one of our guys, you know. And of course, they see the tradition and the history, but they want to know what it's really like being a student athlete at IU. And for me, I want them to know exactly what they're walking into. I'm cutting out.
You cut out a little bit, but now you're back. So you said
I'm back.
Yeah, you said something. You cut out, and then you were like, you want them to know exactly what they were coming into.
Yeah, for me, I always want to just tell them 100% the truth and be very upfront and realistic about what it's like, you know, because I don't want them to walk in blind and like, oh, like this is what, because that's kind of how I walked in, you know. So for me, that's what it's like. But I've never actually been a host, so other guys have usually, like, you know, they take them around and show them what it's like.
Maybe that's why they didn't want you to be a host. maybe they didn't want to know. So what is it like? Okay, so a guy like Tremont Waters comes in, right? You know, use him as an example. He's like this highly regarded, you know, guard recruit who's, you know, going to come in and play the same position as you. Mm-hmm. What is that like? Is your mentality like, hey, bring it on. Let's bring in as many players. Let's get, you know, as good a roster as possible and, you know, compete for playing time? Or are you looking at that like, who's this guy they're trying to bring in and play that plays my position? Like, what is that mentality like?
So honestly, it's a little bit of both, because, you know, if we get this guy, our team is going to be better. But at the same time, we're going to be competing for the same position. But me personally, I have no problem competing for the, like, you know what I mean? I have no problem competing for the position. So, I mean, I look forward to it if guys were coming in at my position and see what they're really about. That was my thing. Like, all right, let's see. Well, let's see what you're really about then. But I know other guys, probably not the same. Some guys see it as like a threat. Like, yeah, who's this guy they're bringing in for me? You know what I mean?
So is it pretty regular that when the guys come in that you play open gyms and get to get out on the court with them, with the recruits?
Yeah. Yep. Pretty much every recruit we play with.
Is that a very welcoming experience, or is that a, I want to kick this kid's ass type experience?
Depends. For me, it's always a, I want to kick this guy's ass experience, but we have to, like, you know, try to, well, we give them the ball a lot, you know, we give them a lot of shots. So, you know, they feel comfortable playing and we want to see what their game is about, you know? So I think it's more of that, like, just wanted to see how they play and how they gel with us.
All right. So I don't want to put you in an awkward position. So feel free to answer this question without naming names, but okay. Were there ever, or name names if you want to, it's totally up to you, but were there ever experiences where you played in those open gyms and, like, you knew that it was like this highly regarded recruit and you guys are kind of talking afterwards like, that guy is a big deal? Or maybe another time where there's like kind of an underrated guy and you're playing him and you're like, whoa, that guy is good.
Yeah, no, that's happened a lot of times. A lot of guys that come in and you're like, oh, that's the 5-star. Oh, nice. But yeah, I've never really seen it the other way around. Because usually we only bring in, like, you know, high-rated guys. But, I mean, also, with that being said, there were guys who lived up to the name. Like, oh, okay, like, I see why he's rated high. You know, like, he's going to be really good. So.
Is there, okay, can you name a name on that? Because that you're not putting a guy down there. Like, who's somebody that kind of came in, whether Indiana got him or not, you know, and you're like, okay, I see it. And then he's gone on to be, like, really good.
Yeah, I forgot the kid's name. Indiana kid with like dreads. What's his name? I think he ended up going to Kentucky.
Indiana kid with, oh, Keon Brooks.
Yes. He came for a visit and I was like, no, he's gonna be good, you can tell.
What is it typically about a young player in a situation like that that tells you they're gonna be good or not? Is it a mentality thing? Because a lot of those guys come in and they're not gonna be as strong as you. You know, it's like we saw that with Christian Lander last year, who, you know, came in this really talented kid, but just wasn't quite ready for the physical aspects of the game, even the mental aspects of the game, because he was classifying up. But what is it typically that you see? Is it that the skills aren't what you thought, that like mentally they're not quite what you thought, you know, even kind of adjusting for the fact that they're not going to be as physically developed as you are?
Yeah. I mean, some kids get rated really high off straight athleticism. So sometimes you'll see them, and if they're not using their athleticism, they're like, oh, like, is this the kid that's rated like high? Because you don't see it, you know? And some kids are just really skilled or have a high IQ of the game, and that's why they're rated high. And you can tell the difference of who has that IQ and just the skill set to improve. You know, you can see the potential of a player as soon as they play.
Okay. All right. So you said OG for best player. Who's the best shooter that you played with at IU?
Evan Fitzner, which probably most people won't believe.
There are a lot of people whose eyes just went open real wide.
struggled shooting during the season, but I've never seen somebody hit so many threes than Evan. Evan was a sharp shooter. And I know he didn't really broadcast it all the time and struggled, but in practice, he would run it up.
Wow. Okay, so that makes me feel a little bit better, though. So those of us who thought, like, this guy is going to come in and really add to the shooting and we're kind of waiting for it to happen, we weren't just waiting in vain. There were things that you could see, like, that gave you hope that this would really happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, same thing. Is it just a confidence thing with him? Because, I mean, he had played at St. Mary's, which is, it's not the Big Ten, but it's pretty high level and been a good shooter. Like, what was different at Indiana?
I think it would be like the environment, the atmosphere, just playing at a much like higher level with much better intensity, you know, and confidence. Eventually, when he started missing, I think he would get in his own head and he just, you know, you can go down a bad road once you get in your head as a shooter.
Man, you know, it seems like all these IU basketball conversations, all roads lead back to shooting, you know, and all shooting conversations lead back to confidence. We talked a lot about on our show about, you know, because did you get to work with Tim Buckley? Tim Buckley was there for a year when you were, what? Okay, so he was kind of known as a guy who worked with people on their shots and could help, you know, fix people's shots, like a shot doctor type guy. What did you get a chance to work with him and kind of see what made him really good as a shot development type guy?
I did. Yeah. There was a point in the season, my freshman year, where I would come in every day early to work with him on my shot. And he's good. He knows his stuff. And I think he helped me a lot with my shot.
And there wasn't anybody like that on the subsequent staff under Archie that would do that.
No. We had, we had Schilling. Coach Schilling, but he was ball handling. He was a ball handle coach, but we didn't really have any shooting coaches, no.
So, you know, because one of the things we've talked about is like, you know, why doesn't either when you're choosing an assistant position or kind of bring in someone external, bring in like a shooting coach? Because NBA guys, it happens all the time. Do you know, like, has Danny worked with, because I think the Spurs had like a renowned shooting coach, right? If I remember correctly.
Best in the business, apparently.
Yeah,
like, and Danny, when he was with the Spurs, he said he helped him a lot. He taught me some of the things that he learned from him, and he said he's probably the reason he's such a great shooter today. Like, had the career he had at Spurs too.
Like if they had brought in somebody, you know, either in the off season or something, and was just like, "Hey, look, Demonte, you're a good shooter. I want to make you a great shooter, but I know you've been shooting this way for 20 years, but we want to make this tweak." Like, is that the kind of thing that you would have been hungry for and liked? And is that the thing that you think could have helped kind of build guys' confidence, or is that kind of stuff overrated?
I have a 50-50 with that too, because for one, I'm one of the guys who, like, you shoot the way you shoot, you know? I mean, your form can use a little tweaking probably here and there, but for the most part, you shoot the way you shoot, and it has to be comfortable for you. You know, unless you're just like a terrible shooter, you need your whole shot, you know, reworked. But for the most part, I think you should just, you keep your shot, but it's all about reps, you know, and what they call muscle memory. But confidence, as far as confidence, it's hard to give yourself confidence for a lot of people, you know. So you need someone like a coach who would give you that confidence. It's all about, you know, making someone feel like, okay, yeah, no, I can make that shot and I can take it every time I take, like next time I take it, it's going to go in. That should be your mentality every time you shoot, for a shooter at least. And I don't think we had that. That's why I think the confidence was an issue.
All right, so this is the number one thing that has never made sense to me about the Archie Miller era. And we touched on it a little bit, but I think this is an even more important point. You talked about how important it was that he played the game and could relate with a guard and, you know, teach you how to see things. But mm-hmm. he was a shooter, you know? Yep. So I've never understood how he was a shooter and clearly probably a guy who didn't want anybody telling him what was a good shot and what was a bad shot, because he was probably going to take them, because that's how, you know, shooters are. I don't understand how he either didn't get that or wasn't better about instilling confidence, or even if it's not instilling confidence, just don't yank it away. Like, don't kill confidence. Like, how can you make that make sense at all?
I would wonder the same thing at times. And I know he played in a different era, but as a guard and a shooter, there's just certain things you should understand, you know. But I don't know, maybe it's been a long time separated since being a player. And I mean, let's be honest, being a head coach at a Big Ten school is a very stressful job. So I think a lot of the stress was getting to him, and that you know, caused some of his ways to drift away.
Yeah. Could you tell that, like, as seasons kind of struggled, like, would it be different from how he was at the beginning of the season when everything is fresh and optimistic, and then later in the season when you're fighting for an NCAA tournament spot? Like, was he a guy where you could really see the difference?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%.
Well, that explains it some. All right, so Juwan has the best hands. OG's the best player. Evan Fitzner's the best shooter. Who was the best leader that you played with?
That's a good one. I want to say Colin Hartman, because even when he wasn't playing, when he was hurt or getting limited minutes, he still would make it a point of emphasis to, you know, I still got to try and lead these guys in the right direction. So, I mean, his effort as a leader was you know, amazing. And I think it helped a lot of guys, not me specifically, but I know a lot of other guys were, you know, needed that.
Do you think one of the things that Tom Crean talked about a lot, definitely his last year, he talked about it other times during his tenure too, was how important it was to have internal leadership on the team. And I think it was his last season that he harped on it a lot. Like, you know, there's not enough internal leadership, yada, yada. And obviously it came up at times with Archie too. From being inside in the locker room, one of the players, did you feel like internal leadership among players was a problem, or was that a crutch that was used in the media to explain teams that whose performance went up and down?
A little bit of both. Yeah. There's some times we struggled. We needed a leader. And it was like, well, who's gonna be the one to step up, you know? And at other times, I feel like maybe it was just a crutch, like you said.
What makes a good leader on a college basketball team? You know, and do you think that's something that can be developed, or do you think that there's certain personality traits a guy has to have to be able to kind of speak with authority and have the other players actually pay attention to him?
I think it's hard to something that you can just, like, you know, develop on your own. I think most of the good leaders are it's like they're born with it, like it's already inside of them, you know. And for me, what makes a great leader is someone who can vocalize criticism without sounding like they're, you know, like trying to come at you. That's one. And two, doing it themselves, leading by example, is the best form of leading, in my opinion.
Yeah. Do you like the vocal part of leadership? Do you think that's underrated in a sports context? Because, like, sometimes also you need a leader who, with 10 seconds left on the shot clock in a close game, is able to just, like, either get somebody a bucket or go get a bucket for themselves. You know, like, there's different kinds of leadership. And actually, that a lot of that ended up falling on you as a junior and a senior. You know, like, can you be And you talked about the role Colin Hartman played as a leader, but he also was, you know, especially by that point in his career, was more of a role player.
Yep.
Like, are the best players on a team leaders, whether they want to be or not, I guess is my question.
Yes, they are. Whether they know it or not, or whether they want to be or not, they are leaders because this guy is watching them, everything they do, you know, so they have to lead by example.
Yeah. All right, so Colin Hartman's the best leader. Who's the best dunker?
Oof. It's got to be either Freddie McSwain or Justin Smith. Choose.
That's pretty tough between the two of them. Yeah. What was it like watching Justin at Arkansas play this year?
I was so happy for Justin this year. I can't even express how happy I am for him. Justin has always been a player with great potential, you know, and I don't think Indiana was the right fit for his style of play. But to see him go on to another school and be successful makes me really happy.
Did it at all make you wonder, you know, kind of what it would have been like for you or for other guys who had been in a certain system, playing a certain way, having the same struggles game after game after game, and then to see him go into that system and flourish?
Yeah. Yes. I've thought about leaving countless a number of times, you know, like as a student, every student athlete has though, like at some point in their career. But yeah, I wonder about that all the time. I've seen guys go on though and not do good as well. So I've seen both sides of it.
Yeah. I'm curious if you could go back and do your recruitment over again, you know, knowing what you know now, but back as 17, 18 year old Devontae, how would you approach that differently? And do you think that you would have ended up committing to Tom Crean at Indiana?
I'm not sure. I don't know if I would have or not. But I would have asked a lot of different questions, a lot more, you know, specific questions that I would want to know now that I've been through it all. And I don't know. I would have went on more visits. I didn't go on enough visits my senior year, or maybe my junior year. And I think that's the biggest reason I ended up going with IU, because I only been on like 3 visits maybe. And Coach Crean was by far the one who stood out to me the most. So,
man, that's such an interesting answer, you know, that you would have asked more questions. You know, it feels like there should be a way to kind of help athletes who are in that position as juniors and seniors figure out the right questions to ask. Like, do a lot of athletes have that support? Is that, you know, something that, you know, that you kind of wish you could have gotten? And is there a way that you can like help, you know, the future guys coming up know what questions to ask?
Yeah. You don't know unless you have someone in your corner who's been through it already, you know, like, so now like I can tell my little brother like what questions to ask when he goes on a visit and things he's going to want to know.
All right. Who is the best passer?
Best passer. I don't know. I'd say me.
Do you remember? I think it was, I looked for this highlight and I couldn't find it. I think it was the Iowa game at Iowa. I'm pretty sure this was you. And I think you made a pass. I think it was a post feed to Duran, like from the top of the key where there was like no angle and you like spun it in like a certain way to get it to him. Do you remember that pass?
Yeah. Yep.
I mean that's one of those where it's just like, this guy just kind of sees the game in a different way and can kind of make, and will try passes that no one else will try. I'm curious what the reaction to that one was. Obviously it worked out, so I'm sure everybody was happy, but was there any like, hey, so if you made a pass like that and it was successful, but it was risky, Was it like a Devontae great play, or was there kind of a good thing that you completed that?
Sometimes it'd be both. Sometimes it's like, wow, like I can't even believe that pass got through. But usually when it completes, you know, there's nothing to be said because what can you say? It got through. But yeah, I was definitely one of those risky. I would take risks with passes for sure. And it probably caused me a bunch of my turnovers. But like I said, it takes risks sometimes to make a great play. And as far as that pass with Deron used to always tell the new bigs coming in, like, this guy right here, he's going to put some spin on that ball when he feeds you in the post. So you just got to be ready to catch it because some guys would just hit the hand and bounce right off, you know.
Do you think we ever got to really see the real Deron at IU as a player?
No. No, I think we've seen flashes of him in some games and then before his injury. And then I don't think we've gotten a fair even chance to see Deron really.
Yeah. He just had so much skill. So much skill. You know, one of those, it would have been great to see a full 4 years with him healthy. Because I think we would have gotten a lot more production. All right, so best ball handler. I have a feeling who you're going to answer for this one.
Me?
Yeah, I thought so. Right. I think the evidence backs you up on that one. All right, so is there, you know, and I know you didn't grow up like watching Indiana basketball, you know, or like being a huge fan of Indiana basketball, but is there a guy from IU history that you wish you could have gotten to play with?
Well, that's a good question. Probably Vic and Cody. That would have been really fun.
Well, that team could have used a shooter too, so I kind of wish that we could have made that happen. What you know, something that's been talked about a lot, and it was talked about, you know, every time that there's a coaching change, is it's like, hey, you know, we want to bring in an IU guy because we want to kind of bring the family back together, you know, have the old players come back. Internally for you, like, did it feel like Indiana basketball was a family? Would guys come back? Like, did you feel, you know, kind of like, you know, I mean, your brother played at North Carolina, which is like the ultimate family atmosphere of basketball because that's all they hire internally. It's like the Carolina family. Indiana obviously hasn't had that from the outside, but I'm curious how it felt to you on the inside.
I would say, yeah, it's a family. I think so because guys who I've never met would come back and, you know, treat us and talk to us like we were family because they knew they were in our shoes and in our seats at one point. So, and I've gotten to meet and talk to some real knowledgeable people because of it. So I think it's a family because a lot of guys come, they do come back and they do visit and, you know, come talk to us. So
do you think more could have been done there, or do you think that you got enough of that for yourself, or was there, like, do you think it could have helped if, you know, if there had been more of that and maybe even like something organized where you've got, like, you know, like you're set up with like a mentor who's a past player, like, is there more that could help there?
I mean, no, I think they do a pretty good job. I think because they do have, pretty much every year I've been there, they've had at least two guys come back, you know, and talk to us or something like that. So, I mean, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. What about the traditions? You know, again, you know, coming at this, I'm always interested to ask guys who don't come from the perspective of growing up in Indiana, you know, and believing from birth that like the candy stripe pants are sacred and that it's like sacrilegious to put names on the back of the jerseys. What traditions at IU like came to really mean something to you over your 4 years there? And which traditions do you look at and you're like, why do you people care so much about this?
I can't say any traditions have really come to us like, you know, I really like this, or I can really see why this is such a great tradition. Because, I mean, I come from a different place. I'm sorry, guys. I don't understand why the big baggy candy stripe pants are so important. Or even, like, we can keep the candy stripes, I understand. But new pants. I'm still wearing the same pants that the guys wore in the 80s. I wore like a 2X.
With Wait, they're the pants. Same? They're the same pants?
They're the same pants. The same pants.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
I figured,
and, it's even before, like, our locker room was updated and stuff. Like, we had old wooden lockers that they had back then, and the stadium is the same seats. But I mean, I understand it's a big tradition, traditional place. But I mean, I didn't really like take on any of them like, oh yeah, like this is a great tradition, you know?
That's, I mean, that's really interesting. And I appreciate you being candid about it, because it's probably not easy to be candid about it, but I'm glad that you are. And I think some of us old timers need to have that perspective a little bit, actually. I did not realize that it's the same candy stripe pants. So you don't get like your own pair to keep and like take with you?
I mean, it's probably not the same exact ones from the 80s, but I'm pretty sure these are some old pants that they were. And they do give you some to leave, but I don't know if it's the exact same ones, you know, that they've been using. So,
I mean, what, you know, so we've talked a lot this offseason about, you know, how do you modernize Indiana basketball? Because I think your description there is so apt for what we've all kind of felt like Indiana basketball has become a little bit, where it's like wearing pants from the 80s is actually a great metaphor for it, you know, and the wooden locker room, you know, the locker room's been updated and they're doing more stuff on social media now and hope, you know, going to bring in this NBA offense. And like, they're really trying. It's clearly, you know, Scott Dolson is like making this an initiative. If they came to you and were just like, Devonte, what do we need to do to make Indiana cool? What do we need to do to make Indiana appeal, you know, to guys from the East Coast or to appeal to a more national stage? Obviously, winning is one. We know that. You got to win. That's the most important thing. What other advice would you give from your perspective?
I would have done the same thing. We need a new strategy of playing. We need to play like it's 2021 instead of like the 90s. That would have been another one. They already updated the locker room. And I think that's gotten us a lot more recruits, honestly, because if they would have came and seen that other beat up locker room that we used to have, they walk to another school and see their locker room is like brand new, then like, oh, well, I'm probably going to come, like, you know, it's probably an easier decision. But,
oh no, we lost Devonte. Hopefully he pops back on here. His camera just popped off. I know he's got to leave in a couple of minutes. There's one more question that I want to ask him. So hopefully he comes back on, but, that's such interesting perspective. And I really am glad that he was candid on that, because it's good to get the player's perspective. You know, to us, like walking around the old locker room where Scott May got dressed and where Steve Alford got dressed and where Calvert Chaney got dressed is, you know, it's like the greatest thing in the world. But, you know, to a young guy that didn't grow up with that, there are ways to build that in. Like, I do think it's cool, you know, if you have, you know, the nameplates on the locker of like the old players who were there, the old players who had your number, like whatever you want to do to remind a young player that you're part of a greater whole. But you don't have to, like, you know, keep an old locker room to do it. I know we updated the locker room, so that's probably a bad example, you know, but it's either way, you know, it certainly seems like Indiana is on the path now to modernizing and to doing some of this stuff. And it seems like it made a difference, as Devonte said right there before he got cut off. You know, probably did or might have, you know, lost some recruits because of that. You know, from coming in and looking at that and being like, you know, hey, this isn't as nice as what I'm seeing over here. All right, bringing Devonte back. Let's see if we got him here. Are you back?
Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry about that.
No problem, man. And hey, and I know you have to go in just a couple of minutes. But I really, really appreciate your candor on that question. Names on the back of the jerseys, does that make a difference? Do you care about that?
Yes. Yes. That was the next thing I was going to say. Guys like that, you know, that's just, it's just what guys like. And also the social media thing, like you said, they're doing a lot more with the media and, you know, giving guys a shout out. That's what young, this generation, that's what, you know, is attractive to them.
Yeah. All right. So last question before you get out of here, I'm curious what you want to do. You know, like, I know you want to play basketball. I know you want to get to the NBA. But whenever basketball runs its course, like, what do you want to get into? What are kind of some of your dreams, goals beyond basketball?
That's a good question. I mean, honestly, I just want to help the younger me's, you know, like the kids I see playing in the park. And I mean, eventually my plan was to open up my own recreational facility and, you know, host tournaments there and do that because that's how I grew up. Those were the best places for me as a kid, you know.
Well, I tell you what, man, you know, I know that your time at IU had its ups and downs, you know, but there's something special about a guy who comes to Indiana, whether it's in-state or out-of-state, you know, and gives you 4 years like you did of blood, sweat, and tears, even if it didn't go as well as you would have wanted or we would have wanted. You know, I know you said, you know, you felt more love from fans than you felt the negative stuff. But, you know, that's one thing I think as IU fans, we kind of pride ourselves on is that, you know, when a guy gives us 4 years, you know, we're going to try to give back as much as we can. So I hope that, you know, once your career is done, and if you do that, which I think is such a noble cause, you know, come back and let us know, because I think there'd be a lot of IU fans who would want to help you out with something like that. And you've earned it because you gave us all a lot of time, a lot of effort, went through a lot, and we all appreciate it. So,
for sure, yeah, no, thank you, man.
Absolutely. All right. Well, who knows? Maybe at some point we'll do a part three. But this was really fun, yeah. Man. I appreciate your candor. I appreciate your time. Thanks.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me, man.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Devontae.
All right. Bye.
Cool. Take care, man. All right, Devontae Green, part two in the books. Really appreciate him giving us that time. Hopefully, you know, over these two parts, we got to all the questions that you would have wanted me to ask. I know there were a couple people on Twitter that, you know, asked, why didn't you ask him about the tweet that he sent out after Archie was fired? And I don't even remember what it was. I remember he sent out like a tweet, something. I don't even remember. I don't even want to try and paraphrase it because I don't remember it. But it was obviously taken as like, you know, this is kind of meant at Archie. I don't know. That just doesn't seem like a really useful question to ask, because I don't know what kind of answer you're going to get. And I think he was extremely candid about his whole relationship with Archie. So that's kind of what matters to me. So that's why I didn't ask that question. But I mean, I just had a lot of fun talking to him. And, you know, wish him the best. I, you know, I know I'm probably in the minority on this, but I am not going to be shocked, if we see him in an NBA game at some point. You know, whether, you know, he has what it takes to become a consistent NBA player, I don't know, but his ability to shoot, I think the fact that his game more fits that style, you know, as long as the health issues that he's dealing with, which are obviously serious but manageable, other guys have done it. I'm not going to be surprised to see him in the G League. And if he gets in the G League and gets hot, you know, what team isn't going to look at that and be like, oh, this guy can make 8 threes in a game? Yeah, I think we can all use a microwave scorer off the bench. So I don't know if it's probable. I'm just saying I won't be shocked. And I actually think there's probably more people that will agree with that than will disagree with that, at least as it being a possibility. Which I think is ultimately the frustration that we all bring to kind of thinking about Devontae's career, you know, and wishing that those final 7-8 games of his junior season could have been more indicative of the whole thing. But I'm glad that we kind of got the stories for why, you know, why everything happened during his time at IU. So, you know, and I appreciate these opportunities to talk with players like him. I would love it if we got the chance to do it more with current players. I do think it would make a big difference. I don't think you're going to get candor from a current player like you get from Devontae, because now he's in the locker room. He's not playing for that coach anymore. So there's a difference there. But also the interview would be different. I would be asking him different questions and just getting to know the guy more as a person, not so much the basketball stuff. And I've expressed that to IU, that I would love to do player interviews like that, where it's, and I'll give, like, I don't care. You can put preconditions on the questions for me. You can listen to the audio back before you want to play it. I get that coaches are going to be nervous about that happening, and a player may be saying something that could be taken the wrong way, either in the locker room or for bulletin board material, whatever. Like, I would have no problem with that. But let's just, you know, let's get to know the guys better. And so maybe it doesn't need to be on a podcast interview, but I do think there's just more of an intimacy that you can get in a conversation like this, as opposed to just on a podium with, you know, media guys. It's just the whole setup of that is more adversarial, you know, where this is more conversational and friendly. That's all we want. I have no desire to catch a player in a gotcha moment or lead them into a question where they're going to say something. I don't care. You know, what's that going to do? Go viral and get people from other teams listening to the show? I don't give a damn if anybody who's not an IU fan listens to the show. And no IU fan is going to want to listen to a player say something that's going to, you know, cause problems in the locker room or get him in trouble. So that's not how we would serve this audience anyway. So I would let, I'm going to, you know, who knows if it'll ever happen, you know, and coaches are paranoid for a reason. So I get it from the flip side. I don't know if I would want to do it as a coach. You know, I think you'd have to really build trust with the person that was interviewing them. And maybe it's something Don Fisher could do, you know, but I would love it, man, because I just think these opportunities to get to know guys from 360 degrees, you know, figure out who they are as people and just talk to them, get to know their personalities. I just think it's invaluable. And I think it would help them connect better with fans. And just like Scotchy said in that tweet, you know, you're probably going to think twice about firing off a tweet with a guy and tagging his name in it if you feel like you really know him, you know? So anyway, I promise you I will be beating that drum until the day that I hang up this microphone. But I believe it. My thanks to Devontae Green. My thanks to you all for listening to this. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And let's get a little music here. Here we go. A little music to do our outro. We're going to have an interview with Brian Evans coming up. I don't know exactly when we'll release that, but you can look forward to that. And, of course, we'll have Assembly Call Radio coming up. And if there's any other breaking news that comes up, we will have that for you here on the Assembly Call. So appreciate you being here. Make sure you sign up for the email list. Go to join.assemblycall.com. And, as always,
take it from the green light himself. Keep your elbows in, eyes on the rim, and go Hoosiers.
I like everything about that.
Hear that? That's the sound of someone trying to steal your crypto. Every day, thousands of hackers online are doing the same. That's why Arculus uses air-gapped cold storage technology to protect your assets. Using our keycard and wallet app to form a protective barrier, Arculus insulates you from hackers and puts control of your digital assets back in your hands. Order the first truly air-gapped crypto wallet at getarculus.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.